As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
What is going on? Welcome to Knife Talk, the number one knife-related podcast on this germ-infested planet, a weekly podcast where we knife makers talking to knife makers or metalsmiths or blacksmiths or whatever, however you identify. My name is Jeff Fader from Fader Knives. I'm here with Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives, the captain. And then unfortunately, our favorite third, Marek Omomasi, is teaching. I think he's deep in Eugene by now. What do you think? I think he's up to his back teeth in Eugene or something like that. He's not with us, but we will hopefully hear from him soon. He's been traveling around, but it's me and Craig this week. Craig, how are you?
I'm very good. Very, very good. Sun's out, you know, it's nothing to complain about. All good.
And you're preparing yourself for a giant all-nighter.
That's Saturday. Yeah. So Saturday early hours morning, I go to the UK. Full 10-hour rehearsal. Big gig, the biggest gig we've ever done. Then I get the coach back to the airport the same day and come home within 24 hours back to France. So yeah.
And there's no way, well, I mean, this is a big ask, but there's no way you could do a 24 hours in the life of Craig Lockwood. You know, you like give a little kind of diary of what you did that 24 hours.
Hi guys, welcome back to the vlog. No, I don't think so.
I mean, if you did 24 hours from the beginning to the end, that would be unbelievable.
I'll maybe do like a Insta story and just cut things together. Could be quite
cool.
Holy
cow, yeah. That's going to be something else.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm looking forward to the challenge of that as well, as much as anything else. It's gonna be cool. So we've had to like fill in things for our rider today, and we have to have a security briefing and all these things. It's just
really?
Like, whoa, yeah, yeah. So it's all very exciting for us. Yeah.
What's in your rider that's worth mentioning?
We've got half a crate of Guinness, half a crate of...
Okay, that's easy stuff. Okay.
Yeah, half a crate of real ale, because we're like old men.
What's real ale? You mean like
real
beer?
Ale is like beer, yeah, basically. Okay. Not fizzy stuff. We've got fresh fruit, and we've got a crate of water. So, you know, very rock and roll.
Pretty easy stuff.
Exactly, yeah.
I had a friend who was the general manager of this theater, and he had a famous comedian, and on this guy's rider was a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue, which is very expensive. It's like a $200 bottle of. So yeah. On his rider, wherever he goes, they got to cough up a big one, $200 bottle of whiskey wherever he goes.
Well, I've booked the Buzzcocks before now for an event, and they wanted 6 bottles of Moët on their rider.
Geez.
And it's like, they're not going to drink 6 bottles of Moët. But in massive letters at the bottom of the contract was, no Moët, no Choët.
That's the title of this podcast, by the way.
No Moe, no Shoe.
That is the best. That is the best. That's awesome.
Let's God make a bless note him. Of that.
You got to give it to him just for that. You got to give him the Moe just for that little lick.
No Moe, no Shoe. Yeah.
That's a good one, man. I can imagine that there's some bananas riders out there.
I think just to test people more than anything else, I think. Yeah.
Right.
They don't necessarily want these things, but it's just the test to see how far people would go for them, you know?
Ugh, wow.
Crazy. Jeez. So what you been up to this week? What's been going on?
Well, it's been, I mean, it's no secret that it's been slow in March. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I'm feeling the same. Looking at all of our numbers, and it's kind of very similar to what happened last year, which is bizarre. But we're doing better than we did last year, but it's still, March is not what I want it to be. And so we're trying new things out and doing new stuff. And we're actually, Allison and Tony have me doing, like, I'm working on 5 different collaborations at the same time, which is kind of nuts. We're still in the beginning stages of them all. I just sent one knife off to this chef friend of mine who's a Food Network guy, and we're going to try to do a collaboration. And then we got a bakery. I'm going to do another. We're going to try to do a different style bread knife. And we have to be conscious of the price, because it's like, you know, you can't be selling $500 bread knives in this particular place, and I want to be involved. So we got like 5 different things, and it's like, it's good, but at the same time, it's relatively stressful. However, what's more stressful is the fact that Instagram has decided to run another wave of algorithms to kind of, you know, take away, you know, and I hate to use even an expression suppress, but it seems as though that they're, you know, they're, what they're doing is they're running another round of algorithms. We talked about this back in November, that their deep learning software has found, you know, posts that go against their guidelines, and then they'll send you a message saying, because of this, this, and this, we cannot promote you to non-followers. So it becomes this whole thing about growth, you know, and the question is have I saturated my own follower group, and how do I get more viewers?
Yeah.
And it becomes this like question of will, you know. So it was very, it was depressing, because it was, you know.
So what rules did it say you'd broken?
They flagged 5 posts, but it was 4 images on one post. So I got like 4 demerits for 4 different pictures from one post. So then they had this whole thing. But the funny thing is after last round, I thought to myself, well, if I'm going to just take them down or appeal them, you can just take them down or appeal them. And a lot of times the ones I take down are the ones that are old. I don't give a shit anymore. And it's not the end of the world. However, I've been told that you're supposed to appeal them, because what the appealing does is it teaches the algorithm, you know, the learning. Yeah. It's supposed to learn. Taking some down. But the whole thing is in November, I decided I was going to do these kind of different style of reels that kind of looped, you know, I do these, the bullshit where I throw the thing and then it turns into something else.
Knife appears. Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out ways in which to kind of game the system or go around or a loophole. And I thought that was doing, and I was getting new views and I got some growth. It's been hard lately. And it just was demoralizing, because like I've been trying to do a good job and to try to find new customers and new viewers, and it was like I started seeing other knife makers posting these posts. Oh, you know, I don't know why I'm paying for being verified. This is bullshit, and we should all leave Instagram. And they don't like knife people. It just got a little bit depressing, frankly.
The evolving challenge.
Well, I mean, it's a good topic of conversation because it's very fresh right now. And it seems as though every few months, and then there's a lot of other people who are, you know, they're depressed about it, because it's like, this is my livelihood. And on this podcast,
for a lot of people, this is their only marketing too, isn't it? Instagram is the place to be.
It's the freest and best, and it's the one that people are on. And the one that, and I can't speak for TikTok. I did TikTok and I regret it. I regret it only because they're not my demographic. You know, my demographic, the demographic we're looking for is, you know, 25 to 50 is my like demo, you know, and it's like they're on Instagram. They ain't on the ones who have the money to cough up to buy this stuff is generally not on TikTok. Now,
it could be
for somebody else. And, you know, same thing for Facebook. Who knows? I mean, what's the demographic for Facebook? 75 to 100? I mean, what? But it's like it becomes an issue where people are getting real good exposure with Instagram. But then all of a sudden, you know, you have these problems. And what do you think?
I think. As much as I don't use it, but Instagram is the place, I think, for makers and creators to put their work. As you said, it's probably the right demographic, the people with the right age. It also allows you to be straight to the point as well. I think with particularly TikTok, you've got to have some sort of angle with it, you know?
Right.
And, you know, competing against, you know, attention of literally 2 seconds. They're gone. I think Instagram is a little bit more thoughtful, as in, you know, most stuff is, particularly on post, is static as opposed to, you know, fast video. But then again, I see so many people who don't actually post. They only do stories.
Right,
And that's more of a sort of a TikTok sort of feel to it. But it's worrying the fact that rules are changing, but it's a free service. What can you do? That it boils down to that, I think.
This is something that you and I didn't talk about this on the podcast last week with Mareko, but you did mention that Spotify is changing their rules too. That's affecting your other podcast. I mean, I don't know if you want to talk about that or not, but what's interesting is all these, you know, a lot of the complaints from the knife community people are, I'm being censored, or this is not freedom, or this is. The fact remains that these are companies that don't really, there's no declaration of independence a bill of rights for these motherfucking companies that can do whatever the fuck they want. Meanwhile, you know, this video is circulating around with Mark Zuckerberg. He went to Japan to forge a sword, and there's this goddamn video of him using the sword to slice a fucking carpet or something like that, which is just like, I mean, you ain't getting more tone deaf than that. I mean, obviously, you don't give a fuck about knife. I mean, for some reason, knife makers seem to think that we are a community outside of the community that we think we are. Hmm. Everyone, nobody knows who the fuck we are, you know, except for us. We think that we're being targeted, but at the same time, just like they don't give a shit.
Yeah. Well, I think all these services have started. They haven't started for knife makers or for plumbers or whoever it may be.
Right.
They've started as this service to make themselves money. And we've come along and we've worked out how to use this to promote ourselves. We're such a small slither. A slither of a sliver. That they don't, you know, they don't cater to us.
No.
So the fact that they can pull the rug at any point, I mean, that really is their prerogative, really is. But it does show how people have been creative and they've managed to carve out a business. I mean, if we talk about, you mentioned my other podcast. So basically, the way that podcast works is we talk about songs. We get to play the full licensed version of the song within it because it's hosted on Spotify. But what Spotify are now doing, they're pulling that service. So you won't be able to play music in podcasts legally anymore. Which, you know, it's their prerogative to do that. And it probably is some sort of licensing issue with labels and stuff further down the line. But it does mean that, you know, my podcast is very small fish. There's plenty of bigger podcasts that they've set up a business doing this, you know, so that the whole idea of their business, their whole revenue scheme all comes from this little service that Spotify really don't care that much about.
Sure.
So, I mean, you talked about lots about, you know, diversifying and not just using Instagram as an example for knife makers and, you know, newsletters and that kind of thing. It's always going to be a constant changing battle, isn't it? Because it's their prerogative to do what they want. We are minuscule to them. We're not. Whenever they make a business decision, they're not considering, oh well, what, how's Jeff and his knives getting along? Is he going to be okay? They're not thinking that clearly.
Right.
So it is just one of those things where, you know, platforms will change their mind, but I do think we're at that point where new platforms, they're not really a thing anymore. Remember sort of 7 or 8 years ago when there was, you know,
Snapchat,
you had to be on everything, and you know, Periscope. Everything sort of seems to have calmed down again now, and let's say, I mean, certainly for the Western world, it's, you know, it's Instagram, Facebook, maybe Twitter to a certain extent, and TikTok. I can't see anything else sort of come in that is going to sort of rival them with regards to numbers. We're always hearing about these new things that come up, you know, 2 weeks later they're gone. Because I think they've just become so intertwined in people's lives. The amount of people who only get their news from Facebook or they only get their news from Twitter, for example, you know, they've become so embedded in the way people run their lives. I don't think there is room for another service. You know, this big four or five, they cover basically everything.
The amazing thing is Instagram has turned into your very quick TV channels. You know, like, and that's what's fascinating. And hopefully, you know, all these companies are embracing, you know, legitimate companies are embracing so Instagram as a vehicle for showing people what they're doing. And that's, I think that's the best part about, for me, what I see, how I see Instagram is a vehicle to get people to my website. You know, like, that's why I'm doing these funny reels, and I'm seeing movement of people, you know, being interested, and it's I have fun doing them, to the point where my Allison wanted me to do a video where I do a whole how to make a knife thing, and I'm just like, for what? So the fucking knife makers can steal my shit? No, I don't think so. And I said, and it's too much work, and nobody wants to sit through an hour, a minute and a half. Like, I'm now getting to the point now where if I do anything over 15 seconds, I think to myself, maybe that's too long.
Yeah, you know, and, no, I agree. Yeah,
and it's crazy. So the what's interesting is there's this real. There's a lot of people who are. I feel as though there's a degree of desperation, and they're upset. The other thing is, and I think that if our listeners are falling into this category, that they find the need to. This could be me. I could be wrong. But when knife makers post a picture saying, you know, a screenshot of Instagram saying you're banned for this, I think your potential customers don't really read it so well, and they think that you've done something wrong. So I make a joke every so often saying that knife makers, when they post on their Instagrams, I feel like they're circle jerking other knife makers. And I feel like if you're looking to get customers, you should be focusing on the customers and less about other knife makers. Because some of you guys, and I'm saying this as respectfully as possible, I'm saying this with peace and love and respect, some of you sound like crackpots. And I'm saying this respectfully, but I think you need to really focus on how do I get the, and you're talking to a guy who just posted a video, I look like I came out of a dumpster. I know all about it, you know, but at the same time, it's like, how are we going to go forward with all this shit, and how are we going to circumvent the problems that we're having and that we're going to keep having until, and they don't care.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. What can you do? What can you do? I tell you what you can do. You can join us for the next Dharma Seal build along.
What?
And when I say you can join us Monday, as in the day this podcast is out, if you head on over to Maritime Knife Supply, they are supplying the billets this year.
Get the fuck out of here.
So they've already been sent. So I've had a message from Carly at Dharma Steel. Lawrence at Maritime, they're on their way to you, the billets for the next build along. There's also a free gift that you get with each billet. And those who buy the billets will know what the free gift is. And Carly has asked anybody going to Blade Atlanta, take these gifts with you. Take them with you. The billets go on sale Monday the 25th. They're currently in the process of updating the website for Dharma Steel as well. But what I'd say is get on their newsletter, because they'll give you the information quicker than we can. So they're finalizing the list of the DCI, which is the Dharma Steel Chef Invitational list of makers as well. So there's lots and lots going on. So if you don't know what Dharma Steel is, first of all, we all know it's, you know, it's the premium, the primo stainless Damascus out there. Super, super easy to use. We can get you a discount if you use Knife Talk at checkout. You get 10% off any Dharma Steel that you buy. But yeah, we often do these build-alongs with Dharma Steel where you get your little billet. Everybody has exactly the same billet, and it's exciting to see what people make. But yeah, these will be exclusively available from Maritime Knife Supply from Monday. And last time, I believe, we sold out within like hours. So I know they've sent quite a few over to Lawrence. So get in early. get your free gift, which you need to take the Blade Atlanta with you too. And we're going to have a lot of fun with this year. They've got big, big plans.
Wow.
So whilst you're there at Maritime Knife Supply, obviously look at everything else they've got. They've got everything you need. Steel, belts, handle materials, tools. Pick your billet and also pick your handle materials. Get it all in one hit. Save on shipping. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com.
Look at you. Look at that. We're bringing our sponsors together.
Together. It makes sense. Last year really was a nightmare because the billet sold out like straight away, and Dharma Steel were getting lots of messages saying, can you do more? And they were like, oh. You know, they didn't have that particular pattern in stock, and there's a lot of to and fro in. So they're well ahead of the curve this year. They've sent a bunch over to Lawrence. So I believe you can actually buy from Dharma Steel direct as well. So if you're European based or this side of the water, I think you can buy direct from Dharma Steel. But obviously, if you're in the States or you're in Canada, Maritime's the place to go for that.
Damn.
Gonna be good.
Good old Carl.
Gonna be good. Yes. It's gonna be good. Right then, shall we start with some questions, do you think?
Well, before we
got news. We got news, apparently.
I mean, it's crazy. Now we got a little bit of news. I mean, we don't get a lot of knife news, but I mean, this is, you know, something I've been following for a while.
Is this the air fryer dude that I sent you in the week?
What's the air fryer dude?
Is that the top news?
What's the air fryer dude?
Well, for those who don't know, occasionally myself and Jeff will send each other headlines from the press.
Oh, yeah.
that make us laugh.
What did the guy with the air fryer? I don't remember that one.
So this is a headline in the paper, and it's got a picture of this guy. It says, "I became an air fryer repairman. Now I'm drowning in the pussy." And the sub-headline is, "Barry had no luck with the ladies, but then he became an air fryer repairman."
He's drowning in pussy.
Drowning in the pussy.
Oh,
so,
I forgot brilliant. About that. Yeah,
so that
I do
was
love...
this week's top news.
if it wasn't for the UK news headlines, I mean, it can't get much better. Drowning in the puss. So we do have some. So I'd heard. From one of the listeners and knife maker, I think his name is Mark Smith. He was saying that I had heard that Forge and Fire, episodes of Forge and Fire, what's going on with Forge and Fire? Like that there was a petition. Mark had done this petition to get Forge and Fire back. And I kind of didn't really want to address it because at the same time, I didn't really feel like that there was anybody. Like, I just didn't really want to talk about it only because I didn't hear anything or I didn't read anything. But there was an issue about, is Forge and Fire coming back? Have they done episodes and they haven't pulled them? What's going on? And then I kind of spent a little bit of time just looking around and stuff like that. And then I saw that someone close to one of the judges had, you know, signed the petition. So it made it very clear that there was... You know, obviously there was something to be done with it. And then I found this article in Brute to Forge magazine. It's an online. Shout out to Brute to Forge. I don't know if they listen, but it's a little magazine for forging. And the story is, "Has the fire been quenched? The uncertain future of Forge and Fire." This is by Jeff Clooney. That's all I know. As the forge lies dormant and the anvils have fallen silent, the blacksmithing community and fans of beloved series Forge and Fire find themselves in a state of eager anticipation and mixed uncertainty. Since the airing of the last episode, History Channel's programming schedules have remained conspicuously devoid of new Forge and Fire content. And despite repeated inquiries by Brute to Forge, obviously Brute to Forge is not the New York Times or something like that. both network and pirate companies, A&E, have maintained silence as impenetrable as the steel craft in the show. This lack of communication is only fueled by speculation and concern among dedicated audience following this show that its journey of craftsmanship and competition. So nobody knows. A&E is not promoting it. Everyone's concerned. And then adding a glimmer of hope to the situation, David Baker, who is one of the weapons maker, one of the judges, in a recent Instagram post revealed that approximately 30 brand new episodes are waiting in the wings. Yet even he remains in the dark regarding their air date. This revelation has sent ripples to the community, simultaneously raising spirits and questioning the network's plan for the series. Hmm. So, as the article goes on, the assumption from many has been that the current season couldn't possibly be considered complete after only 8 episodes, which has led to speculation among the potential return in coming weeks. However, despite more recent seasons boasting episodes counting total of 20 plus, the earliest days of the hit series saw much shorter seasons. So it's speculation time. However, one of the things, so David Baker said they don't know what's going on. You know, they filmed 30 episodes and they don't know when it's coming back. A&E is keeping their trap shut. Everybody with a hammer and anvils, shitting bricks. And I'm under the impression that some people have not been paid. So the people of the episodes that have been aired may or may not have been paid. Champion. Wow. So it's all, you know, kind of an interesting dichotomy of situations.
Yeah.
And this is all allegedly. I'm going to have to say allegedly because this is all based off of, you know, I don't know.
They're not coming after us. We're fine.
All right. Well, it's fine.
I mean, it's been on for a while, though, hasn't it? It's been, what, probably 8-9 years, maybe?
Well, has it jumped the shark? You know what jumping the shark means, right?
Yeah, yeah. It just had its day. It's too much.
That expression came from... Happy Days. Fonz jumps over a tank of sharks. So do you think that there was a moment where it jumped the shark?
I think probably 90% of our audience have probably been on the show already.
Yes.
More than once.
Think so. Yeah. Yeah.
I think they weren't too creative, let's face it. I mean, it's the same thing week after week.
Right.
They possibly could have, you know, mixed things up a little. And I think once you've watched maybe a season or two, you're pretty much done with it, really, aren't you? I mean, you're not learning anything from the show.
No.
You know, they skim over stuff, so you're not learning anything, and you're just
but
watching
it's not
the
meant
same...
for, it's not, I don't think it's meant for really learning.
No, it's an entertainment show. Right. I get that. But it, you know, it's pretty much the same every week. You know, you get the guy in the kilt with the beard. you get the same characters almost. They're all,
everybody's
week.
Crossing their arms. I mean, if you're not crossing your arms on Force and Forge of Fire, you ain't doing it right.
Yeah, yeah.
Forearms, or puffing them forearms up, fluffing each other to get ready for the forearm scene.
Somebody comes up an inch short every week. Yeah. It's always the same. So, yeah, I think once you've done a season or two, you're pretty much done with it, I think.
I've been doing a lot of episodes of Full Blast with these like real forging guys, and I had Riley Kirkpatrick on 2 weeks ago, and I had Ben Sturr on this past week, and we were talking about the World Championship Blacksmiths, and what that is a farrier event, and it's growing in the forging in the farrier world, and you have to forge these, it's like head to head, and they call it match play. Where they have a specific amount of time and they have to forge a horseshoe. And with the fullering in and the holes in, it's got to be a specific pattern. Some of the events, you don't get to see the horseshoe until like 5 seconds before the thing. And then you only have 10 seconds to study it before you do it. And then they have 8 minutes to forge the horseshoe. It's fucking nuts. And it's the closest thing to sport that you're going to get. It's kind of like... I don't know if you watch Lumber Sports. I mean, for some reason, I think they're awesome. It's like these, you know, axe, you know, chopping down tree competitions and stuff. But it's like, it's what you wished Forge and Fire would be. Whereas these guys are like, so how it works is, you know, you have a specific, you have these different tiers of competency. So there's the novice, and then I think there's tier one, tier two, tier three, tier four. They're not called tier, but it's like a specific group. So when you win in the novice group, you're automatically put into the second level, and you can't go back. So they're constantly like moving up, and then you can only stay in your tier until you win. And it's really pretty fucking cool because it's super duper. It's not. There's no speculation. There's no artistic decision. You have a very specific horseshoe. There's a million different types of horseshoes. You have a very specific horseshoe. And when you get to the top tier, it's just a question of like a hammer hit here or there. It's really like, what Forge and Fire should have been. But the problem is the public at large probably doesn't have the appetite to see people forging horseshoes.
True. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So they just gonna need to hit a specification within a certain time.
Well, I don't,
or is it a race? As long as
Ben did it, because, you know, here's the interesting thing about Ben Storm. He makes hammers for farriers. So he thought to himself, well, I better learn how to be a farrier, you know, to make sure my shit works. So there's no, in these competitions, there's no power hammers, there's no presses. It's all your tongs and your forging, but it's really the efficiency of you. And the crazy thing is you have a certain amount of time. Like, 8 minutes, all of a sudden now, how do you maintain your heat? Like, how do you... So they have these coke forges going full blast, and it's like a fucking maniacs. And they do, some of these guys do the horseshoes in, like, two heats, which is bananas. Because it's not just bending a ring. You're fullering out this channel to knock in holes for the nails. And they have very, very specific sizes, very specific... You have to upset the middle, so when you make the bend, it doesn't stretch it out on the top. And it's really like, it's what, as blacksmiths, we should be, or knife makers, what we should be looking at in terms of competition. It's all technique. It's all technique and experience. And it's like undeniable. It's an undeniable, there's no subjectivity. It's like the purest form of forging, and I've been fascinated by it. To the point where I might go with Ben 1 year and carry his...
Really?
I might have to go and check this out. I'm like all in. And by the way, if you want to hear more about this stuff, listen to the Forging Brains podcast. That's Riley and Gavin's farrier podcast, where they talk to the best blacksmiths in the world. And I'm now to the point where farriers are the best blacksmiths on the planet. Ain't nobody better than a farrier. Guys who make the horseshoes. Pretty nuts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you want to know more, you could listen to this week's Full Blast as well.
Yeah.
Which was out on Friday.
Yes. Thanks to you.
Which, you know, a strange wrinkle of time is tomorrow for us. But anyway, yes.
That's all right. Well, so there we go. So who knows? So the Forge and Fire's up in the air. Let's hope that, you know, maybe it's going to... I mean, they got 30 in the bank. I mean, might as well put them up.
I mean, there's been some controversy along the way with them, haven't they? You know, with Will leaving, and then
Jason Knight left.
People saying it was a fix with, you know, with judges. So yeah, there's been a few bumps along the way.
It's an entertainment show.
It is. And as much as I wouldn't say we mock them, but we often bring them up and say, you know, maybe it's had its day or whatever it is. It probably has brought so many people into making knives.
Criticism.
They see that and they think it looks cool, and they think, well, how do I do that? And they get down that rabbit hole.
Any criticism I give comes from a place of love, because I know for a fact that there has been no avenue as popular and as great as Forge and Fire to show the average people forging. So I am, there has been no other, and there will be no other, and I am appreciative of what they've done. So any criticism I've given, which has been a lot, comes from a place of appreciation and, like, you know, how you bitch about your parents, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay. Well, that was
okay.
Cool.
Let's get on with some questions then, maybe.
Well, let's do it.
Doug Lloyd. So Doug, DM'd us. We are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. He sent a question, which is, I had a total knee replacement last week. I will not be able to get in the shop for a while. What are some things I can do to keep progressing my hobby whilst I'm recovering? I'm just watching lots of knife making YouTube videos now.
Feel better.
Oh, things he can do when he can't be in the shop.
Well, feel better, number one.
Yes, yeah. Jeez, a whole knee replacement. Jesus Christ.
You there?
What
Craig,
can
you
do?
You there?
Try and stay sane. Right. Yeah, I mean, if you're just watching YouTube videos, that's going to get tired pretty quickly. There are, I think Jason Knight did some great courses, didn't he? Where you can actually do the sort of complete courses. Maybe do some sort of designs, you know, get a pen and paper or, you know, CAD or whatever you want to do. Get some designs to, you know, keep you inspired for when you are back in the shop, you've got something to work on. Yeah, that's all I could give you, really. What do you think, Jeff?
Yeah, drawing. I mean, just drawing and sketching stuff out is the best thing. I mean, and now you're at a point where it's research time. You know, there are guys who are able to do it. I mean, our friend Fox River Blade is in a wheelchair and he's making it happen. So I think that there are a lot of opportunities for just preparing yourself. You know, you don't have to. I think that preparing yourself by doing some drawings, figuring out how you're going to work on your efficiencies, maybe kind of think about closer, not as much worrying about the forging and the grinding, but maybe figure out different ways that you can do your approach, like even scheduling things. Like I would be like, all right, well, here's how I would do it. I would schedule out, I'm going to do the grinding this morning, and then by the, you know, working out schedules to kind of make yourself a little bit more efficient. But yeah, you know, supporting guys like Jason Knight, buying the Jason Knight videos or Nick Rossi's videos, great. And you know, keep doing what you're doing. I hope your knee gets better. I don't know how you can. I don't know what to tell you other than that. I would just fucking. I mean, me at this point, I'm not looking forward to it. But the last time I was like, I had my appendix out, I was fucking grateful that I didn't have to do any work. Like it was like a forced vacation.
Yeah, make the most of it while you can. Oh, I suppose.
Dude,
yeah,
totally great.
Take Justin's next, then.
All right, Justin Simpson says, "I know I've said it before that flagging of posts isn't an issue. Just delete the post and move on. However, now Instagram just flags more instantly as soon as you delete them. Also, appeal has failed twice for me. What do you guys think of is going on?" So what we were talking about in the beginning in terms of their what is going on is the idea that Instagram is flagging people's content to not be recommended. And I know I won't bore you by it, but I believe, and I think that a lot of people believe that a lot of this has to do with Section 820, 280. I've been talking about it for a while, but basically it's a protection of these companies. So the stuff that's not put on them by the people who are participating, they can't be sued, right? So like basically think about it like a newsstand. If you have a newspaper stand and you're selling a newspaper, a magazine, and someone finds it offensive, you can't sue the newsstand owner, right? Well, what the problem is the recommendations kind of seem to be slipping past the point of their responsibility, and the recommendations of from the artificial intelligence or the algorithms may circumvent their protections. So what they're doing is they're self-policing, and the self-policing is becoming a little bit, you know, they're self-policing with like a bludgeon. They're not doing this on the smartest way possible. So I think that's really what this is coming down to. The bottom line is they're protecting their ass from being sued, and they're just like cutting people out. Just I think that you just got to do whatever it takes, and I think we're going to just get used to every few months we're going to be like, you know, inspected for the most part.
Knife-ageddon.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to have to start to look at this like a every 3 month inspection, and we're going to have to be like, okay, well they got us, they're shaking us down. I think it's going to be, we're going to get used to just having to deal with this kind of, you know, annoyance every few months.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Leroy A. Knives. Hello, KTP. I want to practice making different knives using books or online courses on making a specific knife and from different makers. After hearing Mareko talk about making a Bob Lovelace knife and maybe selling it, I'd like to know if it's okay to sell those knives, and if so, how do I price them?
Well, the first things first is Mareko isn't selling this. He's doing I think this is for a friend, and I don't think he's in the market of making Bob Lovelace knives. I think we need to be very clear that that's not his. He's just doing this as a gift for a friend, and this is not really like he's not going into the Bob Lovelace business.
Yeah.
What do you think?
It is difficult because I think most of us have learned by, you know, whether we're copying or we're doing some sort of course and we're all following the same guidelines. And that's how we sort of learn. I think it gets to a point where once you've made X amount of knives, you start looking at what you have, the equipment you have, how you can become more efficient with the equipment you have. And these are the kind of things that will make your style your own. So I'd say when you're starting and you are making these knives, which are, let's say they're clones of other knives. I want another word, really, I suppose. If you've got somebody ask, and the way most of us normally start is we have family and friends saying, oh, right, you know, can I buy one of them from you? I think that's okay. But when you get to the point where maybe you put up an online store and that kind of thing, and then, you know, you're fully aware that these knives are clones of other people's knives, I think then it's a little bit sort of murky and a little bit icky. I'd say maybe then you want to sort of stay away from that point. But I think if you have got to the point where you've got your own online store and all the rest of it, I think you probably would have got to that point where you're not necessarily doing these clones anymore anyway. If you still are, I'd say maybe you're getting to the point of you're a bit too early to have your store. Right. We're always getting this question of, you know, I can't wait to go full-time and what do I need to go full-time and all that kind of thing. I think this is probably a good pointer, actually, is when you've got your own sort of style and they're selling. I think that's maybe a good time for that. But I think, yeah, I think if you're intentionally making these clones with the intention of selling them, I think maybe that's a bit murky.
Yeah, this is one of those things where I think that the joy of knife making and then the lust for selling them kind of like butts heads, and instead of enjoying the experience of evolving and finding your own style, you're racing to the marketplace. And I think that that's something that everybody does. I mean, I know that when I first started, I was doing knives based off of kind of what I was seeing as an amalgam of what I was seeing. But then there were these very subtle evolutions, and then I would like those evolutions, and then I started to really kind of focus on what's going to work for me based off of time and experience. I think that in the beginning, when you're starting out, there's no question that you're going to, like, you know, probably be influenced by other people's work. It's just the way it is. Yeah, yeah. I think that as you're growing, you should be seeing how you can, like Craig said, how do you make it your own? That's the most important thing. I mean, that's the thing when you're an artist, you know, you can draw something, you do something, how can you make it your own? And the biggest problem that we have is that we're so focused on starting a business, we're not allowing ourselves to kind of evolve and to kind of have the experience of finding our own style. And that's where it becomes this whole idea of, you know, the crazy thing is like, I'm starting to sell friction folders just because it's a nice addition. I didn't sell the friction folders for a long time because I wanted to keep it like for classes. And I know that some people are starting to, from the drawings that I've done and the pictures I've seen, people are starting to sell my style of friction folder, which is fine. It's the way it is. I mean, when you put it out there too, when you put something out there, it's going to be copied. It's just the way it is. And I think you have to kind of accept it. And then, you know, like I said, you got to find your own way. This should be the Leroy A. Knives, you know, job, not my shit looks like what somebody else does.
Yeah, completely agree. And with that,
Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com.
Do it now. Evenheat's of the shit. You know, if you haven't got one, you're definitely missing out. Okay, let's carry on. Diego Le Pen. Hey, cuties. A question for Craig. A question for me. Unrelated to knives. Oh, you fire. I see where you're going. Given the latest results, should Georgia come into the Six Nations and replace the current wooden spoon holders like the British, Irish, and the French have been saying for years?
What does this mean?
I'll finish the question. I'll explain. All jokes aside, hope Wales can bounce back. Keep up the great podcast, guys. So rugby is a huge thing in Wales. It's almost the national sport. And every year there's the Six Nations, where England, Ireland, Scotland, France, Italy, and Wales all compete against each other. And it's a simple table. You get points for winning all the rest of it. And after the games, you get a winner of the Six Nations. If you don't win a single game, you win what is known as the wooden spoon. And unfortunately, that's exactly what happened to Wales this year.
So is that like the dunce cap or something?
It is, yeah. It's basically you're the bottom of the table. You've done badly. But what I would say is, Diego, is look at the average age of the Welsh team. We've got a new coach. We've got basically a new team, and they're all very, very young. So if you actually watched any of the games, you'll see the first half, we were great. Lots of energy, and just lack of experience that let us down each time. And I think these guys, all young, working together now, I think this is going to build a great team for the future sort of 2 or 3 years. So this isn't a quick process for us of, you know, next year we win the Six Nations. We're quite aware that's not the point. But I think in 3 or 4 years, we definitely will be a force to be reckoned with.
That was excellent sports radio right there.
It was, wasn't it?
You know what you did? Wow. You know what you used? You did something that I've listened to a ton of sports radio. You're looking towards the future. You understand, you know, you're not one of these, you know, loser fans who are just like, I want to win now. You understand the long game of these sports teams.
Yeah.
Well, look at you. We're like a sports radio show. Well, I wish we could sports radio. I have so much to talk about with sports radio right now. Oh, the Shohei Ohtani thing right now I'm just obsessed with. We'll talk about it in the after show.
This is the baseball guy. Yeah, we talk about it later.
Oh, this is a great story. By the way, we have great red flags and listener feedback. So whatever you want to do.
Okay, yeah. Red flags. Let's do some of them.
Okay. So red flags are something that the listener, if you go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, you can send us your red flags. Basically something that's happened to you and you recognize it, and it's the red flag to know, all right, I can't let this happen again. These are the things. It's like the expression, you hit your head with the hammer 100 times and you expect a different result. We need to be looking at red flags and like taking them with seriousness. So the first red flag comes from Ben Cuts Knife Work. Red flag, a customer wants an anniversary knife for his chef wife. Damascus, blackwood handle, green spacer. I ask how long, and he says she uses a 10-inch blade at work. I suggest otherwise, but no go. Set on 10 inches and make the knife. Show him before payment. All sweet. She loves it. A year later.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed, when I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, he gets an email. The wife doesn't like to use the knife you made. What are you going to do about it?
What are you going to do about it?
also, I want a new handle. The wood isn't black enough. Needs more green. I offer a smaller knife in stock, claimed. I could offer at a better price than normal. He agreed. He never came to pick up the blade. That's a good one.
This guy clearly doesn't know what 10 inches is.
Hey, baby. Hey, don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. Oh,
he's
baby.
Telling his wife, that is 10 inches, I promise you. She's like, well, I use something
she
smaller
said,
at work.
Yeah, like, she said, inches. You told me yours is 10 inches, but obviously this is way too big. This knife is way too big. She only wanted a paring knife, you know?
Yeah. It's one of, it goes back to the little things like, you know, talking about Forged in Fire earlier. People will watch something and then... You know, watch 5 or 6 episodes. It's like, well, I know more about this now than the guy next to me. Therefore, I can go speak to a knife maker and tell him exactly what's what. It probably is a case of that, you know, that kind of thing. You are very gracious in offering them a discounted other knife, I think, to be honest with you. A year later for them to come back to you and say, well, this isn't working for us. I think it's a little bit strange.
When you're in the situation where you're actually talking to the customers, I used to talk to customers every single time, and we don't do that as much anymore. Now, once in a while, if we're having if there's too many emails going back and forth, if there's a certain amount of emails, then I'll just schedule a phone call just to kind of like, because the phone call is a lot faster.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you're the knife maker, you also have to impose what you can do and what in your experience, because that's the thing. Is like, I have friends of mine. I had a guy who wanted to buy a knife. He's like, oh, I only use a 12-inch chef knife. I'm like, there's no fucking way you use a 12-inch chef knife. That's like, that's ridiculous. You know, he didn't know the size of the blade. And all of a sudden, if the guy says, okay, that's what you wanted, and then you need to kind of impose certain things, and you need to be able to see certain things and impose your will to a certain degree. A 10-inch chef knife, I'm always kind of roll my eyes because I'm just like, there's just no home cook that needs a 10-inch chef knife. It's just like, yeah. They're crazy. They're not an everyday user. And you also, some people just don't know what they want and they don't understand. And they don't understand the practicality of a custom knife versus the practicality of it being used. And I think that you should be expressed. I try to push people away from certain things almost to the detriment of our company because I hear certain buzzwords that I know these people are full of shit. And then I'll kind of explain the pros and the cons of what they're wanting. And a lot of times I'll get people to, you know, acquiesce to a certain degree and say, okay, you know, you're the professional, you know better. And because I don't want that call of like, what are you going to do about it? Because, you know, what are you going to do about it is just like, this is not going to be a problem.
Do you have any sort of pre-sale, like before you start work on it, like get them to sign off on things? Like, would you make a little note saying, okay, this is a 10-inch blade, this is going to have a black handle and so on, and they'd sign that off and then you begin making?
Well,
do you do anything like
now
that?
Now what we're doing is we're doing less and less customs. And the customization lately has more been just about color handles and maybe a different style of knife that we do. So we offer like a custom, you know, Allison says, wrote it as choose your own adventure. And then you can pick the knife and then you can kind of pick the handles and stuff like that. A lot of times people send me a message beforehand and I'll kind of walk them through it. And then I'll say, okay, just buy this. And then we'll just use this conversation as what it wants to be. Obviously, if they want Damascus or if they want something special, then the price changes. But I try to, number one is I really focus on the stuff we're known for or what we do. I really try to stay away from when people say, I only use, and then it's something that we just don't do. Because that, you know, you've taken away your R&D, all your R&D you've already done on the stuff that you're already providing, you know. You don't want to be R&D with something you've never done before. It always leads to trouble because these motherfuckers don't know what they don't want, what they want anyway. You know, oh, I need to have it with a fucking gut hook. Yeah, you're full of shit. You know, it's like you kind of need to express your concerns ahead of the job being done. And then you're the expert. You know, you're the expert. You're the expert of making your knives. You know what's going to work and what's not going to work. That was a good red flag.
Yeah, good one. Yeah.
What are you going to do about it? That's a fucking spicy thing
later.
To say. That's a spicy thing to say. I did have a knife that my man's put through the dishwasher a lot, and I sent you guys pictures. And well, I like the guy, and I just took care of him. I gave him some good customer service, which I think is always, I think customer service is very underrated, and I think that you end up getting way more biz if your customer service is good. Caleb Burgess says, here's a red flag. When a guy says, I need a knife that I can trust when my life depends on it, you know you're in for a crazy request. Yeah. I need to know. When you hear I need a knife that I can trust when my life depends on it, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Well, I'm thinking, what is this guy doing? What sort of scrapes is this guy getting himself into? Where he thinks he needs this knife to defend his life, yeah. You know? It's just...
You know, that's the funny thing is you think it's defending your life. My immediately, all I think of is a guy hanging from a cliff. And he's got the knife. And the knife is like embedded into some crack. And he's hanging.
Like an ice pick.
Yeah. And he's hanging out for dear life. That's what I got. I don't think of it. You know, all of a sudden he's like, you know, the ninja of ninjas. You know, and, you know, he wants your bony ass fucking $125 knife. You don't want that to save his life. I'm thinking about like I'm hanging from a glacier. And my shit's got to fucking hold my fat weight.
Well, my feeling about this specific guy that you're talking about, he just sits at home watching movies all day anyway. He's never going to need that knife.
Or those, you know? You see those videos of those guys doing a lot of the fucking Doug Marquardt stuff in the store. You seen those ones? We've got it.
Oh, no.
They're these like, it's like a video from a knife shop, and a guy will walk in, he's usually overweight, and he'll grab one of the knives, and then you'll get a flip around, he'll go through the motions of like what it's like to be in a knife fight and stuff like that. Oh, those are fucking awesome. And then he's like, yeah, this one's perfect.
Yeah, the weight is just right.
Yeah, I can depend on my. Oh, that. Oh, this little thing is gonna. It's gonna. You know, this little plunge line is gonna be the meaning of my life or death. I love that shit. These are good. I swear to God, people say things, and they're just like, they're so. I just hate it when people talk. Sometimes it's like, just don't say anything. Let's say we're having a good time. Don't say anything.
Sit there in silence. Have a great time.
Just don't tell me about your life depending on what I'm making. I don't need it. I don't care. I don't care about you. You're getting yourself into positions. That's the thing. These guys are getting themselves in these stupid positions, and it's our knives that have to bail them out. Fuck this guy. Fuck that guy. Bayard Knives says, here's a red flag. When displaying your knives at a show and the person says they know all about knife making, then they proceed to run their finger along the entire sharpened edge of the knife and look at you confusingly when they start bleeding. Not sure how they thought that was going to end differently. Thanks for keeping things fun and informative. Aaron from Bayard Knives. I don't know why people just can't be normal. They have to be an expert. I just don't understand it. I don't understand it.
Yeah. It's that thing of, well, I wouldn't say power, where people don't want to lose face. So if you're faced with somebody who knows what they're doing, you try to. It's like when we get, it's the classic thing of having, you know, tradesmen come around the house. And all of a sudden, you start talking like that,
right,
you know,
right.
Just because you want to be accepted by them. You want to be part of that gang, right. You know, and it's bizarre.
I saw a video where a guy was sharpening a knife or something like that, and this guy right underneath it, he goes, oh, you're going to ruin the temper. And I wanted to go in and say, why don't you tell me about temper? What's a temper? How are you ruining a temper? Go tell me how you ruin a temper. And he was like, oh, that's the perfect way to ruin your temper. Why don't you tell me how you ruin a temper? Explain how you can ruin a temper. And I just was like, God,
words
he'd heard. Don't use words. Stop talking. We don't care about your words. Your words are bad. You're not using good words. Don't try to. I have to talk to Allison because once in a while she'll get text messages from people. And the worst thing isn't people talking. It's people writing. People writing is way worse than people talking. And it's because they have time to formulate their idiocy. And when you're talking, you don't have everything is so free form. It's like talking's like jazz. But then you can throw out some good words. But when you're sitting down and you're writing and you're using words that you don't normally use, you can freak people out. And Allison gets freaked out because she thinks that this person knows what they're talking about. And she'll forward it to me. And I'll say, oh, yeah, this guy doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. So just don't worry about that. But it's just like, just be normal. Just be normal. And just people can't do it. I love you.
Okay, let's do some feedback just after this. Oh, wrong way. Where are we? Give me a second. After this.
Combat Abrasives makes the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers. Available in any size at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now.
Professionals here.
You know, I speaking of which, I have got, there are three more red flags. I've got to do them because we're on such a good jag right now that I can't help myself. Paul Jansen has, Paul Jansen is the best. He writes, here's a red flag. The customer thinking because they ordered two knives, there is an automatic discount because they're giving you a lot of business. That's a good one.
Or cash, discount for cash. Yeah.
You know, that is a problem. Sometimes I get, once in a while, I get somebody who'll buy a pile of knives. And then what I'll end up doing is sending them a t-shirt or something like that, you know, just as a thanks and stuff like that. But yeah, that whole thing, that is hilarious. You know, they bought two knives. You're going to give me a lot of business. Fox River Blades, he's our good dude. Once again, he's a great, great guy. Fox River Blades says, hey guys, I have a red flag for you three. Anytime someone says in any variation of what's your bottom dollar or what's your best price, I'm not Rick Harrison. I don't negotiate on every piece I sell. What's your bottom dollar? That's fucking awesome. Yeah. You do have to worry about people who are, I had a friend, a high school friend who used to say to me, give me the friends and family right out of the chute. Give me the friends and family price.
Yeah.
Give me the friends and family price. Like right out of the, no, that you got to do better than that. It's like, you got to do better than this. This conversation's done. God damn. And then last but certainly not least, our friend Kingsford Knives. Kingsford Knives says, here's a red flag. When you send the customer progress pictures and an estimated finish date, and they say, I'm in no rush, you know they don't have the money by then, if ever. Yes, I'm one of those silly people who don't take deposits unless the materials are extra special. I have this one customer that I love. I love this guy because he's been buying from me for years. But what I hate is he does the same goddamn thing every time. He'll buy something. He's been buying from me for, got to be 8 years. He's been buying knives from me 8 years. He will, and I don't say anything, but he'll write, no pressure, no rush. When do you think this will be done? I'm not rushing you. What's that?
I don't mean to bother you, but when will this be ready?
Yeah. No pressure, but when do you think I'll get this? And I know that they're just excited, but it's just every single time. And then I'll write, I've never let you down. I'm on this thing. I'm going to give it to you. And I always erase it because I'm just like, the guy is too good of a customer. I got to just bite my tongue and I'll be like, I'm working on it here. You'll have it in the next couple of weeks. And it's just like every single time he copies and pastes the same goddamn thing. I'm not putting pressure on you. I'm not trying to rush you, but when do you think I'll get it? It's like, drive me crazy.
Nice. Well, tell everybody all about the grinder that you use.
Oh,
beautiful knives.
I swear I am so fixated on my Broadbeck Ironworks grinders. They're the best 2x72 grinders. I love these grinders. They're made by knife makers, for knife makers, sculptors, woodworkers. If you're removing material, this is the grinder for you. And if you go to BroadbeckIronworks.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you're going to get 10% off everything. They have awesome, they have them painted. They have them assembled. They have them unpainted. They have them unassembled. They have them in packages. They have different, you can buy everything a la carte, or you can buy these packages. It's a very versatile company, a great American company. They do great customer service, and I really, really appreciate them. So go to BroadbeckIronworks.com. Once again, put in the promo code KNIFETALK10 for 10% off. Okay. Well, we
do we have any feedback, or should we go back to questions?
We do have feedback. If you, once again, guys, if you want to send us some feedback or participate in the show, that is helpful to us. Go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. This one, first one, comes from Captain Gingerbread 3. That's a good ass name right there. Captain Gingerbread 3 just listened to the Three Dicks episode and wanted to let you all know. Well, I mean, that's a good way to start a podcast. You and their names, your names are the best. Last one, hot tip from Eugene really made me laugh really fucking hard. Poor Mareko. He's like, I'll be in Eugene. Here's the best part of last week's episode. He's like, I'll be in Eugene next week. And you and I were racing.
Who's Eugene?
Well, tell me something about Eugene. We were like, it was like two guys trying to get out of the door as fast as possible. We were like trying to, who could get it out? Who's Eugene faster? That was my favorite. Just listen to the Three Dicks episode and wanted to let you all know they make an ultrasonic cleaner that are a tank with a solution. I use it for cleaning carburetors. Thanks for the laughs. Yeah, we've been getting a lot about the ultrasonic cleaners, and it sounds like it's the ones that we've been getting, the message we've been getting based off of the last episode, saying it's kind of like, you're trying to reinvent the wheel, and it's a lot of squeeze and not a lot of juice.
Yeah.
Small Time Smithing says, I was just listening to the latest podcast and had a comment on the whole circumcision discussion. This is fucking...
We talk about some stuff. Jeez.
I mean, for last guy, I was talking about three dicks, and now this one's talking about.
Talking about half.
Yeah. This is the best. Our listeners are the best. Just wanted to weigh in on the whole circumcision discussion. I want to weigh in.
See, this is where Fortune of Fire was missing out. They need to diversify slightly.
I mean, they don't get it. I mean, you can't beat this. Whether or not anyone agrees with it, if you're not going to do it, just don't shortchange the doctor. Otherwise, it's a ripoff. So, he's like, Fox River Blade, once again, I have a great idea. Oh, this is a good one for you. This is a good one. He did a two-parter, and I broke it up. So, Fox River Blades, once again, our buddy, says, I have an idea for a segment on the show. A lot of people have their playlist of shop tunes that they listen to. Maybe people could send in what songs they love to listen to while in their shop to get them in the flow. I would love to hear your three favorite songs for the shop. Do you have any? What would you say would be your favorite songs for the shop?
Oh, I don't know. I'd need to give this some thought. I hate that. It's one of those questions where people say, like, what's your favorite film or, you know, whatever. Depends. It depends on your mood, doesn't it? Completely. So, yeah, I could put together a playlist of, you know, 30 songs, but when people say, you know, top five, it's always difficult for me.
Well, we have a SiriusXM. I've been a SiriusXM subscriber for a long time. I love it. And usually what we'll do is in the mornings, if it's Monday through Wednesday, we'll be listening to Howard Stern live. He's just so great. And I just love listening to him, and it's great. But then the music stations, the one station we do the best with is called Lithium, which is lots of grunge 90s music. Both David and I are the same age in the same time frame, so we love the whole 90s grunge music. That whole era was really kind of, so we listen to that. I like classic rock every so often. We've been trying to change it up a little bit. We're doing a little Ozzy's Boneyard for a while, a little bit, and then we mix it up a little bit. There's a YouTube channel that we listen to sometimes, and there's a Beatles channel every so often. I mean I'm all over the place. I don't really need the music, really. You know, I want to hear people talking.
Yeah, I've been massively into horror podcasts over the. I spend a lot of time in the car, and I listen to loads of podcasts, but horror podcasts. And there's this one called Uncanny, which is a BBC podcast, where each week they have like a different spooky story and they try to get the bottom of it, whether it's real or not. But I've discovered they've done a couple of sort of deep dives into these ghost stories where there's like 8 or 9 episodes on this one story, and each one's like an hour long. So it's like a huge audiobook of like a true story, which is like a horror and, you know, about hauntings and stuff, and I'm just well into it, well into that at the moment.
That's wild. So they're like true mysteries or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not fiction.
No, they're real people, so they interview real people as well, and And then, you know, they have these experts on then who are, you know, trying to say, well, this couldn't be true because of this. And they got somebody arguing, you know, counter-arguing. They're always really good, really good. Yeah, Uncanny, it's called. Yeah, and they put the sound effects and stuff in as well. It's
a mood. I kind of wish years ago we had on the Zodiac Killer. We had the whole episode. This is a deep dive, and I know we've talked about it before, but still. I got reached out by this professor who was doing, you know, like investigating the Zodiac killers, and they asked us about, you know, what we thought about this particular murder weapon and stuff like that.
Dr. Chris.
And we had Dr. Chris on. This is a great episode because it was like, here's the funny part. It's like, I thought this is going to be great for the podcast. We can kind of be our own CSI. And I mentioned to you, mentioned to Mareko, sounds good. We get Chris on, Dr. Chris on, and the best, there's a few different things about this whole episode, which I was thinking this could be a really great way for people to get interested in what we're doing, because all of a sudden now, you know, they don't know, these people don't know anything about knives, and we can kind of deduce certain things. Well, number one is you had him on Skype. All right, you tell the story. You get him on Skype and paint the picture.
So the backstory of this was he came to us. He was working on the Zodiac Killer case.
With a college professor.
With a college, yeah, university, yeah, yeah. And there was one of the reports of a description of the knife that was used, one of the knives that was used. So he wanted to come on the show and talk about the knife and see if anybody would know anything about this style of knife, or whether we could, you know, pinpoint the maker, for example, and whether we could get to the bottom of the case,
right,
man.
Yeah.
So we were quite nervous about it, I remember, at the time.
You and Mareko were terrified.
Me and Mareko, we were just like, are we going to use our real names? Because if we catch this killer, he could be after us, kind of thing.
So the best part is I'm thinking to myself, the Zodiac Killer has got to be in his 90s or 100 at this point. And this all happened in the 60s and the 70s. The guy's got to be dead by now. Meanwhile, I did not know that your wife and Mareko's wife scared the shit out of the both of you by saying they know where they might know where we are, and because Mareko's in the northwest, I guess there's a high probability that there are like serial killers in the northwest or something like that. You both fucking clammed up the whole time. You both fucking, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, okay, great, we're gonna really get to the bottom of this, and you guys are saying, you know, Mareko's saying yep, or something like that. But the better part, so that's gone down the tubes. But the better part is, you turn on the Skype to Dr. Chris, and what do you see? What do you see? The Professor Chris.
Yeah, so the way it works is I sort of run the board for the podcast, and I patch in people then, and we used to have, you know, a lot more guests and stuff like that. So this particular one was by Skype, so there's video involved, but you guys couldn't see Professor Chris. You could only hear him. But I can see him, and I'm not sure if he was aware that I could see him. So he's in what looked like a typical serial killer motel room. That's what it looked like he was in. He's on the bed, like with this 1970s, you know, bedspread. Curtains are drawn, and there's like shards of light coming in and so on, right? It's exactly like a film. But he's got his top off, right, with these big sort of... titties is the only way I can describe these. He's chugging from like a 2 liter bottle of like 7-Up or Mountain Dew or whatever it was. And I'm thinking, this is meant to be like a serial. We're trying to find a killer here. And I wasn't sure if I was being punked at one point.
But it was, if you listen to that episode, his voice is very serious. Like he sounds like a professor. Yeah. Now, Mareko and I had no idea of what you were looking at. And you know what? That was also at the time where you used to text me in the middle of the show to tell me a joke or say something funny or say something or get me to, you know, whatever. And I just, in my mind, I'm thinking to myself afterwards, I'm like, I don't know how you're not cracking a smile.
But it was like, typical, as you'd imagine, like a 70s horror film. He's in this motel. It's hot, and there's like an old fan in the corner, and it's blowing. Everything's quite orange. There's shards of light, and he's his titties there with this massive bottle of like 7-Up. It was just, oh man,
God, you know, that was our chance for real legitimacy. In my mind, I'm thinking, oh, we're gonna break out of the knife making community. This is gonna be like, we're gonna do something. It was like a disaster. Yeah. It was a fucking
Yeah.
It was funny, but the funnier part was the next episode where we gonna pull the curtain down and be like, okay, Mareko's wife scared the shit out of him, and they afraid some fucking old geezer with a fucking knife's gonna come after him in a wheelchair. You in France, your wife told you the same thing. You're not saying anything, and I'm holding my.
She's like, we've got kids now. You need to be very careful what you say. You may have followers out there. You may.
So all of a sudden it's Charles Manson. That's hilarious. I'm so glad we went down to memory lane. I think that like. Every podcast has these episodes where there are these fun moments. I know that when I used to, my first podcast, The Downward Spiral, our favorite episode, we had two favorite episodes, but one of them was we were podcasting, Nico Tavernisi and I were podcasting, and a fucking skunk walked in. And everybody ran out except for me because I'm like Mr. Radio Guy. I wanted this to be my 9/11 moment, and I was going to stay by the microphone and report. While this skunk is walking around me, and everyone's like, gotta get out. And I'm staying. I'm going to keep podcasting. So I'm podcasting with this fucking skunk, you know, crawling around my feet. So, but all these episodes that have these like special moments, I love that fucking Dr. Chris shit. That was funny.
We've always said that we could have a highlight to reel. That could be 3 hours of just us cracking up laughing. But yeah, there's a lot of content to dig through.
And that reminds me. So, Jared Thatcher, when he was listening to the podcast, he reached out. He knew exactly the knife we were talking about. He sent me pictures, and I said, "Well, do you want me to?" I said, "Do you want me to get you in touch with Dr. Chris?" He goes, "Fuck no." He's like, "I don't. What do you think? I want to get killed by?" So he was worried about the Zodiac killer too. I said, "Why don't you come on? We'll talk about it." He's like, "Are you crazy? I don't want to be targeted by a serial killer. You a bunch of fucking maniacs." It was hilarious.
Brilliant.
So,
right, I'm going to tell everybody all about TexasBarrierSupply.com. It's where you go to get everything that you need. Whether you're a blacksmith, a knife maker, a farrier, if you're hitting metal. Head over to TexasBarrierSupply.com. They sell Indasa Rhino-Wet. That's a question that we get every week. People, how do you make it easier to hand sand? That's what takes up most of our time. And the answer's simple. Use Indasa Rhino-Wet. They sell it at Texas Fire Supply. So make sure you fill up your basket with Indasa Rhino-Wet and anything else that they sell at TexasBarrierSupply.com. Use Knife Talk 10 to get 10% off your order.
I got a couple more and then we'll get out of here. This one comes from Adrian Elliott. He goes, "Hi guys, love the show. I tried listening to that other knife podcast. It was like listening to paint dry. Very quiet and dull. Keep up the good work. Adrian Locksmith." So I had to like bleep out the other name. We weren't gonna be trashing other podcasts.
Yeah. But, when you said the other, I mean it could be one of many. I mean there's plenty of them.
You can put in all of them, frankly, as far as I'm concerned.
He was talking about Full Blast, clearly.
I mean, maybe. It's fine by me. I don't blame him. I'm with you, dude. I'm with you. But I tell you what, we are the number one knife-related podcast on the German-fested planet, whether you like it or not. And then the last one comes from our friend Duck Rabbit Forging. He says, "Here's some feedback. We measure time in many different ways. Seconds, minutes, hours, days, years. And the amount of time it takes for Craig to take a shit." That was a good one. That was a callback for a couple weeks ago, and you had to go in the middle of the podcast. And that is now a unit of measure, time measurement. So congratulations.
A CS unit.
CS unit. Well, let's fuck around for a little bit. What do you say? We've done enough, haven't we?
Should we do it? I think we've done the show, haven't we? Yeah, we've done the show. So let's just pretend something has happened now. Slacking off our belts a bit.
So here's the story, and we can talk. It kind of leads us into an interesting conversation. So I mentioned a number of months ago, Shohei Ohtani is the highest paid athlete on the planet. He's paid like $700 million for 12 years, something like that.
No Moe, no Shohei.
No Moe, no Shohei. That's right. Very good. I fucking, you're the man. You're the fucking the best. So no way, no show. So he's a Japanese. He's a unicorn because he's an ace pitcher and he's a fucking home run slugger. He's an awesome pitcher. He just signed a deal with the Dodgers. So he has an interpreter who helps him with his English. You know, he translates the English because he doesn't speak a lick of English. So there's this investigation that his interpreter owed an illegal gambling site $4.5 million. So in baseball, there's this whole, you know, gambling is verboten because there's a history of the, there was a team, the White Sox were, you know, they basically tanked a game just so the bookmakers could win. And, you know, Pete Rose is banned from baseball because he used to bet on his team. Gambling, and you can't gamble on, if you're a baseball player, you cannot gamble on any sports.
On the game. Yeah, yeah.
So originally they were saying this interpreter who's been with Shohei Ohtani from the beginning, for years, they're saying that he had a debt. He owed this money, and Shohei was very upset, but he decided to help him pay. And then there are these links where there's like these giant sums of money. I mean, Shohei Ohtani's got the money. You know, $4.5 million is nothing to him.
So is it Korean or something like that?
No, he's Japanese. They're both Japanese.
Japanese, okay.
So right. So money's been paid to pay him off, to pay off the bookie. And then all of a sudden, Shohei Ohtani's lawyer said that his interpreter stole from him, and now we're getting into the point where there's a cover-up, and nobody knows what's going on. But this is the most important baseball player to Major League Baseball, and he's embroiled, which is the beginning stages of an incredibly... This could be a terrible, terrible thing for baseball if, you know, we don't know what... We're at the beginning stages. We don't even know what's happening. But it's a wild story.
Just looked him up now. $700 million
over 12 years. Yeah, but this whole scandal. Because was he involved or was he not involved? And you know, now in the United States, gambling is legal. The sports gambling, they have these legal sports gambling, and sports gambling has become huge. And we don't know the extent of how bad it's going to get. Do you ever do any gambling? Have you done any gambling?
Yeah, I mean, sports gambling, it's always been a thing in the UK. I mean, I don't do it every week, but if there's like a particularly big game that we're watching on TV or something like that, we'll go online and we'll put, you know, we just put a little bit down just to make it a bit more exciting, you know? But it's not something that I do.
Like, what's the maximum you put down?
Like £20 okay. or something, you right. know? Nothing, yeah. you know,
30
not,
bucks.
Not crazy.
Something like that.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Because now in the United States, sports gambling has become, I mean, like, if you listen to sports radio, they'll tell you the odds. If you watch sports on TV, they'll tell you the odds. And now yeah. they're getting to the point where you're going to be able to, if you're on a tablet, there's going to be like a leaderboard or a betting board, and you can just press on the betting board, and it'll take you directly to the sports bet the sports book that is associated with the sport, and you can just put that bet on there. Like yeah. every day on the sports, they'll tell you at the end of the show their picks, or, you know, betting has become such a huge part. What's fascinating to me is I started listening on this is, you're going to think I'm crazy. Saturday mornings, there's this show called, my name is Craig, and it's this former sports radio guy, Craig Carton, who had a terrible gambling addiction, and he talks to other people with gambling addictions, and I'm riveted.
A lot of footballers in the UK that particularly from the sort of 90s, you know, it was a real big problem then, because they're young, they're getting paid shitloads of money, they work for 3 or 4 hours in the morning. In the afternoons, they're all free. They all go off. They all play golf together. They all do that. And then they all start gambling. And a lot of them had big, big problems.
Well, the guys he talks to are, you know, usually regular people who some days, you know, they would go to, they started out just going to Atlantic City to play the slot machines. Next thing you know, they're, you know, quitting their jobs. But the craziest part is, you know, when you hear about people getting involved with drugs or getting involved with alcohol, and then it takes like, it's almost like years of which it becomes a problem. All these people with gambling addictions, from not never gambling to bankrupting their homes and having their wives leave them, it's always like a couple of months.
Yeah, it's exponential.
Lunacy within like under a year, you can go to having a normal life to having nothing because it's crazy. I listen to this and I'm just like, oh my God, I'm never going to bet again, ever. Never once.
Oh. Yeah, and I mean, I don't know if it's the same in the US, because I know they had stricter sort of gambling laws there. But, you know, it's just you know, apps on your phone, and it's just in seconds it's done, you know? And, you know, you can cash out early, like halfway between the game for reduced odds, and there's all these different things going on. It's, yeah, it's a big, big thing for a lot of people.
There was, at the Super Bowl, there was, this is a crazy story, I don't know if we even talked about it, but there was a guy who bet, like, $30,000 that there would be a streaker who would streak across the field, and he jumped out, and he was the streaker. He got arrested, he got fined, but then when it came to cashing in, he made $300,000.
Wow. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's just like, all right, I'll fucking take the heat. You know, you get a fine, $1,500 fine, but he made like $300,000. It's total mad. The gambling is total madness. And the only gambling I ever used to do was I used to play blackjack. This is a crazy early, when I was a very young, I was hanging out with very wealthy people. And one of the my high school friends was a Kuwaiti oil sheik. I'm not kidding. Great guy, Kuwaiti oil sheik. He says to me, my friends, I have a place in St. Kitts in the Caribbean. If you pay for the airfare, I'll take care of the house. I'll take care of the food. I'll take care of everything. So got the airfare, fly down to St. Kitts, and they say, all right, you know, they gamble here. We'll go to the gamble. It's the first night we all get killed, right? The next day, we're at the beach. We're hanging out with a guy who turns out to be a blackjack dealer, and he tells us how to win. Tells us how to win, how to play all night and win. And he says the biggest problem with blackjack is if you want to keep playing and not lose, you cannot. You know, have you played blackjack?
Yeah.
So he says never. He says always hold on 12. If anything over 11 or a king or an ace. You hold. You hit up until 11. If you get 12, 13, 14, 15, you hold. You will play all night long because there's five decks of cards, and then the averages of you busting are much higher. So he says, whatever you do, and he says, what I want you to do is I want you to take a $20, put the $20, get it to chips, and then when you start to make your money back, change the chips out to cash. And then as you change the chips out to cash, you put the cash back in your pocket because then all of a sudden you don't see the money as chips. We played all fucking night long. I mean, we didn't. I think we left with like, I think I was positive $65 or $75. But we played all night long. Well, the problem is if you're on a table with people who really gamble, they fucking hate you. So because you're not taking the cards that they want you to take the cards. You know, you're fucking their odds up. And I got kicked off a card table by this big fucking guy. He's like, get off my fucking card. I'm not going to play your table. You're going to leave. And me and my friends were like, get the fuck out of here. This guy's going to beat the shit out of us. That was the last time I ever gambled.
To play with zero risk.
Zero risk. More chance of winning. You can't, because with blackjack, and this obviously this isn't, this is all of a sudden.
Anything over 11, you could always bust.
You're playing against the dealer. The dealer has to hit until 17. So we were just like, we learned all these tricks from this guy. We were playing all night long. We were playing all night long. And, you know, it was so much fun but it wasn't like high stakes at all. But it was like the casino was mad at us. The people at the table were mad at us. And I was just like, I think I'm going to get killed. I think I'm going to get killed. So that's it for me.
Look at us talking sports and gambling.
Telling you.
Tyson and
Jake Paul.
Jake Paul. What's going to happen there then?
You know what? God bless Mike Tyson because, you know, he was a multimillionaire back in the 80s and then he lost all his money. So anything he does to make more money, I'm sure he's making more money now than he ever did. He's 60 or 57? He's 57.
Doesn't he run like a weed farm or something now?
I think in my heart of hearts, he's going to beat Jake Paul. I just think that
I'd like him to.
He's got so much technique. He's got so much power still. I really cannot believe that Jake Paul is going to beat him. But what do I know? I also bet with my heart. I pick these guys with my heart. I don't pick them with my brains.
I'd like to see Tyson, do some damage to him because,
The one thing about these Jake Paul, whether you like it or not, is he's getting these fighters money. Like, all of a sudden, these fighters who he's fighting, you know, all these MMA fighters who got taken to the cleaner by, you know, the UFC, they're making money with Jake Paul. So, I mean, it's just like, get your fucking bag, dude.
Yeah. And it's big money. So this isn't pay-per-view. This
is
a
Netflix.
Netflix, like free-for-all subscribers.
Are you going to watch?
Worldwide. Definitely.
Yeah, I'm going to watch,
too.
Yeah.
It's going to be... I think it'll be like a seminal event. I think this is something that, you know, Netflix would probably do more of in the future. And I love the whole thing. It's not so much the fight. I love the idea that everybody around the world is watching this thing at the same time. You know, it's an event. And I love that. You know?
Being part of something, you feel... When I used to get pay-per-view fights all the time, I loved them because I felt like I was watching something special. Like, I remember...
there's an excitement to it. Yeah,
you feel like you're part of something. That's why I like radio, because it's not recorded. And you feel like you're part... Yeah. I remember when Howard Stern talked a guy from jumping off of a bridge. I listened to him, and I stopped everything. Mm. He talked a guy from killing himself. Talked to a guy from killing... You know, you become part of something, and... You have this special connection with other people who are part of that too. Like, that's why sports for me are so much fun, because it's like you're part of something really great. Like, I have a friend who was at this amazing Knicks game, and he's texting me from the game I'm watching it at home, and the fact that I was just watching it made me feel special. And it's great. I think it's great. Unfortunately,
when is it? July, is it?
I don't know.
It's a fair way away still.
I don't know. The sad part is like, back in the, 80s and the 90s, these celebrity fights were so gross. But now it's just like, it's the only way you're going to get people to, non-fighters to watch, non-fight fans to watch these fights, So what are you watching lately? Anything?
Nothing really. Just busy. I'm rehearsing virtually every night here in my studio, so I'm not really watching much TV. Nothing really. The Rookie, every now and again, I'm still watching, which I'm loving. Absolutely loving it. With that thing where I watch it with my wife, but occasionally she'll fall asleep, so I watch an episode more than her, or if I can't watch that night, I'm doing something, she'll watch an episode, so... As much as we're watching together, we're not really. So I don't know, understand why we can't just go ahead and watch, because we're not sitting together and watching, but we're always in the same at the same point,
right,
I suppose.
Right.
But no, it's good. Yeah, I'm loving that. That's pretty much it, really. I'm not really watching much.
We're
TV.
Finishing off the morning show, and Jennifer Aniston is just getting banged by Jon Hamm. That's kind of pretty good. Jennifer Aniston looks pretty fucking good, dude, for her age.
She's clearly had work.
Of course,
done,
so what?
Yeah, still looks
very good.
Yeah,
her face looks pulled back, but at the same time, she looks pretty good.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah, I haven't seen the latest season.
Season three?
Yeah, I think it's still a couple of years old still, I think.
It's good. It's really good. Oh, sorry for spoiling it. It's getting banged.
But Jon Hamm bangs
up. Sorry about that part. At the same time, it's... But what are we watching? We're watching that. I watched a little bit of spring training baseball. Next week the season starts. I'm excited for baseball. Watching the Knicks, and I'm listening to. I don't know. I'm not watching a lot of fictional shows. Curb Your Enthusiasm is fantastic. I don't know if you ever watched that.
No. And weirdly, I talked about when me and Mareko did the show a few weeks back.
Seinfeld.
I talked about Seinfeld, and I started watching it, and
I'll tell you, I remember what you guys were talking about. Here's the thing about Seinfeld is it was such a New York show when it came out. I remember when it came out. Actually, I got a crazy story. I knew a girl my age who was dating Jerry Seinfeld, and she was underage, and she got picked up. It's an unknown story, but I knew this young girl who was... We were in high school, and she's fucking dating this comedian, and it's fucking Jerry Seinfeld, and she got, permission from her family. It was a bizarre story. My wife just fucking hates it, but it was so New York that there's no reason why it should have kept going outside of New York. Like, outside of New York, so it was so really New York-centric that I was just like, it was great. I mean, it was totally great, and... For some reason, it really resonates outside of New York. There's a lot of friends of mine from the South who fucking die for Seinfeld. So, like, there are some certain episodes that are really good that I would highly suggest you watch Master of Your Own Domain. That's where they have, like, a test to see who can go without jerking off. I mean, that's the Master of Your Own Domain. Master of Your Domain is the best episode because they have it's crazy they got on the air. And it was like they kind of talked to see who could go without jerking off. I mean, it's like hilarious, and all the crazy things that happen to each one of them to make them, like, fold, You know, it's one guy's dating a virgin, and one guy's, you know, seeing these the nurse sponge bath another woman, and it's hilarious. And then another guy, there's like a streaker. There's a woman who's just outside in her window without her clothes on. It's the best. If you watch one episode, Master Your Own Domain is the best episode.
Okay, maybe I'll go
that's
back and
the
watch
one.
That
that's
one.
At least. Yeah. That season is like unbelievable, and it's hilarious. And the fact that it was done in the 80s and it was in the 90s, it's just bizarre.
I think early 90s, I think it seemed that way. Anyway.
We loved it. And Larry David is the fucking greatest. And he does the new Curb Your Enthusiasm is hilarious. It's fucking hilarious. So we're psyched about that. That's all I got.
Nice. Okay. Well, we're hour and a half. That's a show. Thank you all for listening. We shall be back again next week. Bye for now.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.